It's time to accelerate. Hey, friends, this is Andy. Welcome to episode 608 of Accelerate, the sales podcast of record. I am truly honored to be joined by my guest today on the show. Joining me is Jay Abraham. Jay is a preeminent global business consultant. He's a best-selling author, and we'll talk about one of his books on the show today. He's helped literally thousands of companies around the world profitably grow their businesses. And interesting, you know, business luminaries like Damon John of ABC Shark Tank say that Jay is their mentor. Think about that. So very honest, honored to have him on the show. And we're going to talk about how to achieve breakthroughs in sales and growing your business by having passion and empathy for the customers you serve. Now, so often we hear people tell us, well, we need to have a passion. The key to success is having a passion for what we sell. And I've always thought that was a little backwards because that's about us. That's not about the customer. And so in the conversation today, you'll hear Jay talk about the importance of having this passion as well as empathy for the people your product will help, you know, that your solutions serve. And I think that's really the right perspective, but you want to make sure you stick around for this great conversation. If you'd like to see show notes for this episode, go to andypaul.com/608. Now, before I talk with Jay, let me remind you that today's show is brought to you in part by Chorus.ai. Chorus.ai makes your customer conversations work for you. Vice presidents of sales, sales enablement managers, account executives alike all benefit from the power and ease of Chorus.ai's platform. And customers of Chorus.ai have seen dramatic increases in their close rates within the first few months of using it, and ramp-up periods for new reps cut by nearly half. It's a great learning tool. So you want to check it out? Go to chorus.ai. That's just going to chorus.ai. Chorus like school chorus. chorus.ai. All right, let's jump into it with Jay. Jay Abraham, welcome to Accelerate.
Thank you, Andy. It's an honor and a pleasure.
Well, it's an honor to have you on the show. So I have a standard question I start the conversation with almost all my guests, and that is, in your opinion, what's the single biggest challenge that faces sales professionals today?
Probably, and I'm thinking on the fly because I've never been asked that, authenticity, credibility, and true intent in behalf of the prospective buyer.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, it's... And you write about this in your books. I mean, this idea that seems to be lacking from many salespeople today is this idea that they're there to serve. They're first and foremost. This really is a service profession.
You are rewarded for the value you create for others that they recognize and truly grasp. And you are outrageously rewarded in direct proportion to the quantity, quality, and consistency of value and the dimension of it that you bring somebody, but very truthfully, it has to be in alignment with the prospective buyer's definition of what value really is. Too many people think that what they think is valuable, the prospect thinks is valuable, and it's not necessarily too. So you have to have alignment of what their definition, what their criteria, and how valuable they may think something of value is, because there's not diversity, but disparity in interpretation.
Well, I think that aligns with a lot of things that you talk and write about, which is that, you know, there's this idea here that sales gets into a bind. And I think sales leadership, people trying to sell and market anything, that they assume they know what the buyer wants. And that's sort of this lack of imagination, right? That's sort of challenging, because like, they're saying it's just easier to go with, I'm going to assume I know what you want. I mean, it's sort of this idea I find that we're hampered by in many of our industries and sales, is that, you know, we've defined a persona that we're supposed to be selling to, but we forget they're actually selling to a person.
It's an individual, and he or she is coming into it with a myriad of driving factors, reality to them, prejudices. I think the first thing is you got to be in alignment and verbalize the depth and the dimensionality of the problem or the opportunity they're trying to solve. And then you've got to be able to know what the relative value of it is in solving and what the relative negative impact of it is right now and not being solved. And then you got to be able to prove that your solution, which everything is a solution, really, solves it in a way that is either more powerful, effective, quantitatively, qualitatively better, easier, faster, more sustainable, more higher yield. You got to be able to know the benefit to the client and what that benefit is worth in terms of money or timeline or getting them a raise or avoiding breakdowns. But I don't think a lot of tech salespeople really get in to what I would call the human factor, which is what people have to really deal with on the job. They fall in love with how brilliant the technology is, as opposed to become impassioned and animated by what the technology is going to achieve for the client. And then one more level, how that achievement, what it means relative to either productivity, savings, man hour, time to market, whatever.
Yeah, well, no, I was just thinking back as you were talking about the tech being in love with its own technology. I mean, I old enough to be back in some of the early days of some of the major tech companies like Apple, and I remember going to a trade show, a big trade show, and I was in the Apple booth, and how this one person comes in and talks to several people, and I sort of was debriefing him as he was leaving. And he was so disgusted because everybody was so arrogant about the technology, they weren't bothering to sell this guy. And it was, you know, a potentially large corporate client, which, you know, was a real challenge for Apple at that time.
I think, Andy, my observation, and I am not technologically skilled, but I help a lot of technology companies because I can figure out what the purpose, what the benefit, what the advantage, what the reason why that technology should exist, and explain it, quantify it, compare it, and project forward what it will mean when it's deployed in the benefit of the user, whether it's B2B, B2C, whatever it is. But there's a lot of data that is pretty conclusive that more sales are made with storytelling, metaphors, analogies, similes than are ever made with PowerPoints.
Yeah, absolutely.
And yet everybody uses PowerPoints.
Everybody uses PowerPoint.
Give me your deck.
Yeah. Well, even if they had a metaphor in their PowerPoint, that would be a start.
Yeah, that's funny. When people ask me for a deck, and I sell very expensive, intangible services, I refuse to send one because they're already basically relegating me to a commodity criteria of judgment. Mm-hmm. I've already lost in acknowledging that I'm basically, a commodity and I'm non-distinctive. I refuse to do that. And a lot of people go, okay, I'll send you the deck, as if somebody really can get what the hell the deck means when it's not being presented and embellished. It's a real disservice to the product or the service, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've worked with a number of companies that have raised money in Silicon Valley and from the investors, and my take was always the best presentation when you went to a partners meeting was one where the laptop stayed closed.
Yeah.
And
where there's passion,
right?
Not for the product, but for the people the product is going to benefit.
Well, and this sort of gets to one of the theses of in your writing in general, but certainly as reading the Abraham Mindshift Challenge that you ebook that you had and
it changed your life, didn't it?
Well, it made my brain hurt for one, because
hope that's good.
Yeah, because there are just so many examples in there.
And they're all nonlinear, and they're all make total critical thinking sense when you think about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it just sort of, yeah, I'm still trying to process a lot of it. But the thing that struck me is, you know, we talk about, you know, we have mindsets that limit us, right? Just with certain beliefs. But I like what you sort of put in there, which is that, you know, this particular belief is the way I interpret it, is that we're constrained by the fact that we think business has to be done a certain way.
Yes.
And that we have to follow these prescribed paths. And being conventional is the biggest limitation.
But you do understand that it's almost not the fault of the individual or the company, because they're predicating their actions, their stratagems, their business models, everything on what everyone else in the category does. They don't really have a context of expanded understanding of all that's possible, much of which, excuse me again, is highly more superior in yield, highly more superior in risk abatement, highly more superior in cost efficiency, highly more superior in speed to market. I mean, everything about it, they just don't know it because they've never experienced it, because they've spent the preponderance of their life in industries that pretty much follow the herd, and they're a little bit better, a little bit worse than everybody, but they really don't have a context of how much more is possible from time, effort, activity, interaction, access to a market, a prospect. There's a tragedy there that is, I'll use another double word. It's a dichotomy because it's either hilarious or pathetic, depending on whether it's yourself or someone else. Don't you think?
Yeah. Well, I mean, and the point you're just making is in terms of the limitations is, you know, you have one of the breakthroughs you talk about, I think in Getting All You Can book is you said that, breakthrough, I love this part, is breakthroughs increase in direct proportion to the amount of networking, brainstorming, and masterminding you do with like-minded, success-driven people outside your industry. And I thought, wow, well that's, you know, everybody goes to networking events to meet people in their industry. It's like, this makes so much sense.
It is, what I advocate is not really counterintuitive. It's more intuitive. If you look at life, Andy, almost all the big breakthroughs came from outside industries. I'm going to be a little bit dated, only because I don't want to have to to thrash up newer stories and remember them. But for example, fiber optics wasn't developed by telecommunications. It was aerospace, and it was borrowed. FedEx borrowed the spoke and hub distribution process that the Federal Reserve Bank used to clear checks overnight. Rogaine came from a pimple medicine experiment. Viagra was a blood pressure experiment. I don't know if this is a great achievement, but roll-on deodorant or the roll-on pen, one or the other, came from each other. But my life has been dedicated to traveling outside the typical realms and identifying, understanding, maybe not all, but the widest swath and depth of strategies, business models, selling approaches, access vehicles, competitive positioning, advantage generation, remonetization, lead attraction, conversion, strategic alliance, all kinds of non-linear seeming ways to explode sales in an industry that's unfamiliar with it. And it's sort of like I'm the one-eyed man in the land of the line of the blind. I'm babbling, but I did do a blood test and I have no blood left, so I'm doing pretty well.
It sounds like they drew it. How many times did they draw blood from you?
Four or five, but I didn't eat, and they had it was actually sadistic. They basically give you all this super amped up glucose, and then they're taking all your blood out. So you're jumping around, and then you're getting weak because they're depleting you of your oxygen. It's a very sadistic test.
Well, hopefully the person drawing blood was somewhat painless. I mean, I was just at my doctor's a couple of days ago, and he has a new phlebotomist who's drawing the blood. Second time I've had her. She's just happy just to sort of jab it in there. So
there's a difference between a compassionate, and see, I think this actually introducing a wonderful issue, which I'm going to turn from a tangential conversation to a relevant point. The key to all success is examining, understanding, appreciating, recognizing, exploring, acknowledging, and respecting how the other side is experiencing not just the interaction with you, but their whole life experience and how it relates. A phlebotomist that just basically jabs and goes on has no awareness or compassion or empathic respect for what it's like to be in the seat receiving it, not just the pain, not just if you have an overt anxiety, but the correlation of why you're there taking a test that might reveal something hopefully benign and hopefully modest, but that you're scared shitless to find out the answer. It hurts like hell. It's magnified many times over because it can be a cold and uninviting environment.
Yeah.
And that goes to, I mean, that's selling. You want to sell comfort. You want to sell empathy. You want to sell that this is going to be painless and you appreciate what they're like and relax. We're all here to help you. And really, that's selling, isn't it?
Oh, it is. I mean, if the phlebotomist had just said, you know, this might sting a little bit.
I have a new idea for you, and I think you could own the whole category.
Go.
Okay, masochistic selling.
Okay.
And it can be part, the first one after that, it's condescending selling. And that's just going to be a trilogy. And the third one, Andy, can be basically, it can be self-love selling, where you are enraptured with your technology to the point that you're almost having a love affair in public with it, as opposed to trying to really figure out what it's going to do to benefit the long-term outcome of the client.
Yeah, the last one's probably taken already, but.
Well, you're right. But you still have two. Maybe you can acquire it at a discount because it's probably not that successful.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
but imagine you could have trilogy selling, the new breakthrough approach to rapidly self-destructing your career so you can go on and do what you're really qualified for.
Yeah, I love that. I love that part.
Hey, Andy,
yes.
you get me involved in your business and we'll shoot for, most people shoot for the moon. We'll shoot for the center of the earth.
All right. All right. I've written that down. We'll talk about that. Well, actually, you know, it's funny. It is a way to use sort of that. You were sort of anticipating maybe in inverse proportion, sort of the question I was going to ask is that, we talk about these basic, you know, human qualities that I mean, you listed a couple handful there that sales needs to possess to really, you know, achieve at the level they should be able to achieve. And it's like, it seems like there's no continuity sort of from, you know, group to group that sort of comes into sales, you know, new cohort enters. And it's like, okay, well, we need to teach these human skills, but shouldn't they already know these human skills? Why do we act when suddenly they come into sales like that they need to be empathic, right? I mean, to succeed as a human, you need to be empathic.
Have you studied Stephen M. R. Covey?
Yeah, I love The Speed of Trust, yes. In fact, I just interviewed him a month or so ago.
Did you interview just him or did you interview Greg Ling too?
Just Stephen.
Stephen is a friend. Greg is a really good friend. His father was a great benefactor of mine, who died too young. But Stephen has taken something which is axiomatic, trust. Everyone thinks they have trust. And he's explored it. He's examined it. He's expounded on it. He's done examples of modest trust, major trust. Mm-hmm. He's done research on the variation and differentiation of yield you get from different kinds of trustful relationships. And his conclusion is 90% of the people in business trying to utilize, engaged in any activity where trust is a critical commodity of exchange and compensation, or at least incentive for the outcome, are suboptimal in their ability to wield, manifest, convey, exhibit, and really, what's the word I want to use? Transfer high trust characteristics. And you'd think that everybody would know trust. You think everyone would know ethics. You think everybody would know and have a elevated level of integrity, wouldn't you?
Well, yeah, you'd think that the, you know, substantial portion of the people just growing up in society would have developed these sort of basic.
Assuming they had parents, I'm stepping on you, that instilled noble and worthy values to them to be good citizens, good human beings, good contributors to society. But I think the world today has gotten disconnected to one another, don't you think?
Well, I wonder whether that does play a role. I mean, it's sort of the thing we all default to, right? That you know, we live in our own bubbles, and even though we're quote unquote more social, we're actually more isolated. And I wonder, because I mean, from a generational standpoint, I've seen some research. Jeff Colvin talks about in his book "Humans Are Underrated," that saying that actually research has been sort of measuring levels of empathy in graduating classes from college since I think the late 70s. And that even starting then, the trend was they were starting to see a decrease in empathy sort of year after year among, you know, a fresh cadre of graduates going off into the work world.
So if you're decreasing empathy, what are you increasing?
That's a good question. It's a good question. It's a good question. What fills the void?
Is it condescension? Is it selfishness?
Yeah, I think it's selfishness, don't you?
Yes, I think it's actually self-consumption,
self-absorption. Yeah,
that's a better word. I think there are many. I do work; it's not my primary, but I've done a lot of work with millennials, and they really aren't very interested in growing and developing others. They're not very collaborative. Their communication skills, frankly, leave a lot to be desired. Their sense of empathy and appreciation beyond just transactional value is, to say the least, suboptimal. That's polite. And it's very fascinating.
So what's sort of, I know that this is maybe not a fair question, but in your mind, sort of, as we look forward, I mean, what's the cure, if you will, or what's the remedy? Assuming there's no cure, maybe temporarily at least treat the symptoms. Because it sounds like what we're doing now, and when people come into the workforce, is basically sort of our first job is we have to train them how to be human.
Well, I think we have to train them on the purpose of being human. The purpose of being human is to add value every day in every way you can in every person you interact with in your life. It's to make people better off because you're in their life, but it's to understand that better off can't be an inside, the inside knowledge you've got, but they don't appreciate it because everything from your prospective buyers to your internal clients, who are all the team members you work through with, collaborate with, have to also feel that. And I think it's teaching people. We have something that I'm very proud of. And I do apologize again for my voice being so weak today. It's called the Strategy of Preeminence. We have one called the Advanced Strategy. And it teaches you how to basically fall in love, not with your company, not with your job or your profession, not with your product or service, but with the marketplace, the people or the businesses and the people within those businesses that you are serving, and live with a vision of how your product deployed or your service deployed in their life is enriching, protecting, enhancing. And if you can get to that place, two things happen. It liberates you, because I don't think a lot of millennials have ever really experienced the true joy and fulfillment that comes from connecting at a deep level with the people you serve internally and out. And I think once you do, it not only liberates a side of or a dimension within that's never been turned on and up, but it also animates your spirit in a way that makes working joyous, intoxicating, makes interacting with people something you delightfully look forward to, makes the dialogue you're having always interesting, stimulating, meaningful, and relevant. I mean, there's a lot of things. If I don't do sales training, but if I did, those are the kind of things I'd focus on.
Well, it's sort of following up to that point to a certain degree is I struck, because you talk about in one of the books that I was just gonna get to that trait is the breakthroughs are really due to a degree of open-mindedness, and which I agree, and maybe curiosity falls into that open-mindedness. So I was interested in your perspective, because if you look at just from a societal standpoint, is we seem to be hardened into our own positions, right? I mean, whether it's politically or socially or whatever. And I was wondering whether you're seeing that's translating into business as well. Is that, people having a harder time, with breakthroughs, because if they're so fixed on certain aspects of their life, does it translate then into business and work?
There's far too much rigidity. I'll tell a little metaphor. Pardon my voice again. Is many, many years ago, I'm obviously older than you, I had the pleasure of being on one of the very first 747 SPs, which were the long distance nonstop that was in Australia, flying back to Los Angeles. And heretofore, you had to stop in Hawaii to refuel.
Yeah.
This one was a direct flight.
Yeah, these were the little short 747s, yeah.
Yeah, and they would go long distances. And the pilot announced two things a couple of things. He said, first of all, don't be fooled. This thing weighs, I don't know, a million pounds. He said, it's going to scare you a little bit because you're going to think we're going to hit the wall, but it needs a lot of runway. I'm using metaphors, by the way, before it takes off. And it did. And if it had a shorter runway, it wouldn't take off. So a runway is a interesting sort of a just recess it in the back of your mind. Now we're flying. We're at about 35,000 feet. And I've been privileged to fly first class. And I had the honor of sitting next to a pilot that was flying to pick up the second leg, because they can only fly for 8 hours. And this was, I don't know, a 16-hour flight. Mm-hmm. And he's on the window, and I've never really looked out the window at a wing. And I look at the wing, and the damn thing is flexing. Shit, I bet 20
It's flapping. You're right.
And I'm thinking, oh, shit, we're going to die. And I was visibly gripped with consternation, anxiety. My fingers started grabbing. I don't know if I was dripping puddles of sweat, but I made a conscious comment that I'd never noticed that, and that Is that normality? And he said something to me, which is a metaphor for all of our life. And I am hopelessly curious, and my expertise and skill is a blessed accumulation of the hundreds and hundreds of industries I've been curious about learning and I've interacted with around the world. But he said, you have to understand that flexibility is your lifeblood on this airplane. If the wings were rigid, the first time we hit turbulence, it would crack off and we would not hurtle. We would just dive bomb to the ground, splat, pow, no more Jay or Andy. He said flexibility is essential to, to successful air flight. And I realized it's essential to successful everything, because people want the world to be black and white, and it's not. It's gray. And when you are rigid, you've immediately put up restrictors, deflectors, moats that sabotage your ability to grow and be exposed to a broader, vaster sphere of possibilities, of alternatives, of enhancers. And in a world where knowledge is doubling every, 6-9 months, anybody who's arrogant and ignorant enough to think that they can be ostrich-like in their paradigm or their process or their business perspective or their competitive perspective is basically they're playing Russian roulette, but instead of one bullet, they've got three in the chamber.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that to this theme we sort of talked about is people, it just feels, and I see this with sales teams and individuals that I work with, is that, we become sort of satisfied with the fact that we've sort of closed ourselves off to a certain degree, that we, gather information from, a defined sphere, and there's not as much, I don't see as much curiosity to break out of that sphere. And that's why I was so drawn to your suggestion. The breakthroughs come by the amount of time you spend with people outside your industry. Heaven forbid, that you do that, because then you do start getting exposed to the ways other people are doing things that could have a huge impact on what you do.
Well, it's a delusion to think that your industry and thus your company within it has uncovered the highest and the best performing anything.
Right.
Strategy, business model, positioning, marketing approach, articulation. It's improbable. I've had the benefit of not only working with, 400 or 500 industries around the world, and about 7,000 and some odd sub-industries, but I've also worked with very large companies that do outrageous analysis of variability, how doing something one way, saying something one way, writing something one way, positioning something one way, pricing something one way, guaranteeing something one way or another, the differentials. And the differentials are profound, sometimes as much as 5 or more times better or worse. And when you have that kind of leverage potential for the same time, effort, opportunity, capital expenditure, human capital, asset, closed-mindedness is a disservice to anybody who is a stakeholder, anybody who has hitched their career to you. And if you have a wonderful product or service, it's a disservice to the prospective companies you could be serving and helping.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, Jay, great stuff. Unfortunately, we've run out of time for this conversation, but I'd love to have you back on again and talk some more. I think we're getting to scratch the surface. So, if you could, tell people how to connect with you and learn more about what you do.
Well, what we do mostly is work with private companies for large fees, and most people can't afford us. We have some products, but we have a pretty cool website. It's abraham.com, but the one they want to go to is abraham.com/50shades. It's got 800-900 either hours or pages of very, very high level material that we generously gift without even asking for an opt-in. We're more of a benefactor to the entrepreneurial market, and we monetize by doing clients and expensive programs, and we don't even ask for an opt-in. So if I can help, then it's my pleasure to benefit your listeners. And I hope that I don't know that I was what you expected, but I hope my output was what you're trying to do for your market.
Yeah, no, it was great. Believe me, people will enjoy this. So again,
it's my pleasure. And get me a copy of this at your earliest convenience, and I'll put it on my website for you too.
We will. So again, Jay Abraham, thanks for joining us. Friends, thank you for spending this time with me today. Make sure you come back, join us for the next great episode of Accelerate. So thanks again, and until next time, this is Andy Paul. Good selling, everyone.